Is your job meaningful? It's an intensely personal question, of course, and there are many different ways our careers can be worthwhile, from supporting our families to offering creative fulfillment to making a meaningful contribution to the community. The meaning of work is a question that's both eminently practical and deeply philosophical, which may be why an organizational psychologist and a philosopher teamed up to write the new book, Is Your Work Worth It? How to Think About Meaningful Work, by Christopher Wong Michelson and Jennifer Toasty Karras. Christopher is a philosopher who teaches at the University of St. Thomas and NYU, and Jennifer is a professor of management at Babson College. Our curator, Adam Grant, says their book won't give you all the answers, but it will help you ask the right questions. Here are Christopher and Jennifer to share five of their big ideas.
Hi, I'm Christopher Wong Michelson.
And I'm Jennifer Toasty Karras.
I'm a philosopher who teaches ethics in the business schools at the University of St. Thomas and NYU.
And I'm an organizational psychologist at Babson College. And we've been working together for years to study how tragedies like 9/11 and the COVID-19 pandemic lead us to reconsider what makes work worth doing in a life worth living.
In our new book, Is Your Work Worth It? How to Think About Meaningful Work, we bring not only our contrasting disciplinary perspectives to explore this question, but also our different cultural backgrounds, genders, experiences as parents of children of different generations, and career stages. We ask questions and tell stories about everyone from knowledge workers to manual laborers, and we pull those stories from pop culture and the news, art and scholarship, and original interviews. We'd like to share with you five insights from the book about what we learned about work and its worth in our lives. For dramatic effect, we've associated each of them with the name of a long-running daytime drama, because doesn't it stand to reason that everything you need to know about meaningful work, you can learn from a soap opera?
Insight number one, one life to live. It turns out that after 43 years on network television, One Life to Live did have one more life to live, this time on a streaming service. But that second life was to be brief, indicating that, in fact, we do have but one life to live after all. And so we might as well use our limited time wisely. For most of us, work will take a disproportionate share of our waking adult hours. It defines our identities, especially in a culture in which the first question we often ask when we meet someone is, "What do you do?" And our work shapes our legacies, the mark we leave behind by what we produced, whom we influenced, and what it all meant. Yet, most of us don't have enough time in the workday to pause working in order to ask the big questions about why we do the work we are doing, unless we are faced with a tragedy that forces us to confront our own mortality. Most of the victims of the 9/11 terrorist attacks died at work, and though they ranged in age, they were on average in their late 30s. Their stories suggest that we may have but one life to live, but also that we may have many working lives to discover work that is worth it. Godwin Ajala had been a lawyer in Nigeria before taking a position as a security guard at the World Trade Center while studying for the bar exam and earning money to bring his family to the United States. Brooke Jackman was a bond trader preparing to get a graduate degree in social work because she decided there were more important things in life than making money. Both 9/11 and COVID-19 claimed victims from all points on the socioeconomic spectrum. One difference is that around half of American COVID victims were past the typical retirement age in the United States, yet their deaths were nonetheless tragic. The stories that reflected back on their careers were rarely straightforward. They included immigrant meatpackers trying to build a better life and nurses who prioritized patients at their own peril. Every one of these stories is about a life that was all too short, and they all remind us that if we are fortunate enough to be able to choose what we do for a living, to examine for whom and why our work matters.
Insight number two, days of our lives. This show has had its high points and low points. The highs include its reputation as television's most daring drama in the 1970s, when it addressed then-controversial issues like interracial marriage. The lows? They include bringing back characters from the dead, one of them four times, which tanked reviews but boosted ratings. This apparent paradox is not unlike that which afflicts many workers in modern times, when our happiness reaches its lowest point in the same years that earning power peaks. Kathleen Gluck hit the lowest point of her life after she'd achieved the goal she'd dreamed of since growing up in the shadow of a father who was a successful partner in a New York law firm. She had decided after college that the law was not for her, but partnership was, and she was admitted to the exclusive club in a Big Four accounting firm when she was just 37 years old, balancing its demands with being a wife and mother. If the economic value of our work defines our social status and sense of self-worth in society at large, it's even more about the money at a firm founded by accountants, who were trained to believe that everything that counts can be counted. Kathleen remembers that there were daily reminders of her lack of value, and feeling that her worth as a human was tied to what she produced. She sat down one Thanksgiving to write her suicide note, before resolving she wasn't willing to die for her job. She got professional help and thankfully support from her fellow partners, who encouraged her to take time off. Never one to shy away from a challenge, Kathleen returned to the partnership, got a PhD, and chose to pursue some new professional adventures. But her story is a reminder that not everyone will emerge from the mid-career lows unscathed. It reminds us to ask, how should we plan and prioritize our working time to support our well-being at every stage of our lives?
Insight number 3, General Hospital. Unlike most soap operas, the setting of this one is in a workplace. However, the plot lines tend to be more about the patients than the providers. In one story, the victim in a bus crash saves the life of a patient needing a kidney transplant. In another, a patient who dies from complications from AIDS earned the show accolades for public health education. Our preference for stories about life away from work is probably associated with the old cliche that nobody on their deathbed ever wishes they had worked more. But that is not necessarily true of people whose work is worth it. People who are fortunate enough to find their calling at work not only tend to report higher job satisfaction, but higher life satisfaction as well. Apropos of the theme of General Hospital, the healthcare workers we talked to as we wrote the book demonstrated characteristic romantic markers of work as a calling, feeling a sense of destiny about their work as a worthy end that they would rather pursue than anything else, and without which their existence would be much less meaningful. They included Mori Raifu, who, when he was on scholarship from Ghana, got used to working 3 jobs while studying as a college student. So working 2 jobs as an adult is second nature to him. His first profession was as a neurosurgeon, and he used his earnings from that career to help finance a medical technology company that is digitizing records to give patients greater control over their healthcare on his native continent. Healthcare is one of the prototypical calling-driven professions. These stories help to explain why work as a calling may be disproportionately represented in the so-called helping professions. But they can also inspire us to make a change when we feel stuck in work that is not worthy of us.
Insight number 4, the young and the restless. Unfortunately, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life is at best easier said than done, and at worst, simply false. The downside of work as a calling can lead to a life of overwork, underpay, and exploitation. But that doesn't diminish the potential romance of loving your work that probably leads a lot of young entrants to the workforce to feel excessive pressure to find their callings, and contributes to mid-career restlessness among those who are still searching. As a case in point, The Young and the Restless spawned the careers of Eva Longoria, David Hasselhoff, and Tom Selleck, probably leading legions of other actors to wish the same for themselves. But most of those who made it on the show didn't make it big. Chasing work as a calling all too often ends unhappily. In our book, we retell the legend of Paul Gauguin, the French modernist painter who left the life of a stock trader to become a painter, abandoning his family in the process. One of his artworks would eventually set a record for most expensive canvas ever sold at auction, but only after he died was his work recognized by the market. Jen and another of her co-authors, Chassa Dobrow, who's a concert bassoonist, have studied musicians who dream when they were young of making it big, finding that having a calling in music leads many of them systematically to overrate their own talent relative to the evaluations of objective experts, ignoring the well-meaning advice of their teachers advising them not to enter music professionally, and setting them up for years of restlessness and unfulfilled callings. Of course, as we've already noted, there are both upsides and downsides to work as a calling, leading researchers to refer to it as a double-edged sword. Our conclusion is to resist the unrealistic pressure to do what you love. It's okay not to love your work every day, but instead to seek work that's worth loving for what it contributes to society, provides for your family, and makes possible in life at work and beyond work.
Insight number 5, guiding light. Every one of these soap operas has stayed on the air for a long time, but Guiding Light was the most enduring of them all, a 72-year run that started on the radio in 1937 and continued on television until 2009. The guiding light of the title was originally imbued with religious imagery, referring to the lamp in the office of Reverend John Ruthledge, to whom people went for help with their problems. These origins are appropriate, since the classical notion of work as a calling comes from God. More recently, a secularized version of calling has emerged to refer to work that is personally fulfilling and/or socially valuable. What all these conceptions of calling have in common is that work can be one of our guiding lights toward leaving a meaningful mark on the world, a lasting legacy that endures after we are gone. Robert Guest could not care less about leaving a legacy. When we spoke to him for the book, Robert was sitting in a car that he rents on Turo, think Airbnb for automobiles, a source of passive income that he lives on, combined with income from a part-time job as a street sweeper and disability payments from his time in the military. He looks back wistfully on his deployment in Afghanistan, when he felt he was doing some good in the world. But for the most part, he thinks work is a waste of people's time, a search for stability that too often results in boredom in a life meant for adventure. He was preparing to drive the converted school bus he currently lives in down the Pan American Highway to Costa Rica, where he will park it on a beach. His dream, he told us, is to be kidnapped by pirates, the ultimate sign that his life was well-lived, far from the workaday existence of his peers. Should we care about leaving a legacy through our work? On one hand, to be overly concerned with our legacy seems egocentric, but speaks to a primal fear of oblivion that many human beings have. On the other hand, to be unconcerned with your legacy seems nihilistic about the possibility of enduring meaning. What every one of the stories we have told shares is the sense that worthy work has the potential to be one of our most important contributions that we make to the world. So thinking about the legacy your work will leave can be the guiding light to help you imagine work that is worth doing in a life worth living.
To recap what we can learn from these sudsy titles, we've only got one life to live, so we need to consider carefully how we spend the days of our lives before we wonder on a general hospital deathbed if we spent too much time when we were young and restless, searching in vain for work that we loved, instead of discovering that work worth loving can be the guiding light of our contribution to this world. Thank you for listening, and thanks to the Next Big Idea Book Club for inviting us to share our insights. We hope that there's still much more for you to discover about how to think about meaningful work in our book, Is Your Work Worth It?
Thank you, Christopher and Jennifer. That was 5 big ideas from Is Your Work Worth It? How to Think About Meaningful Work by Christopher Wong Michelson and Jennifer Toasty Karras. Also, check out our book by 4, This Working Life, How to Navigate Your Career in Uncertain Times by Lisa Leong and Monique Ross. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.